When people come to church, they should not be handed or an order of service with a smile, but should be given hard hats and life preservers, because church should be a dangerous place, a zone of risk, a place of new birth and new life, where we confront ourselves with who we truly are and who the church is calling us to become. It's written by Annie Dillard. Now I'd like to invite Karen back again.
When I was 3 or 4, my family started attending the First Unitarian Society of Madison, Wisconsin. One service stands out among all the classes and services I must have attended. I'm standing in the foyer in the dark, holding the hand of an adult, possibly a parent, I don't remember. We're in line, waiting. What I do remember is that I got to hold a candle, and that was very exciting. Then the people in front of me began to move forward, and we entered the sanctuary. I looked across that dark space and saw another line of people entering by another door. Dark shapes, all holding candles, moving slowly forward like us. And holding that large, safe hand, I looked way up front, up high to the peak of the roof that I knew was there, but in the dark I could not see. And it seemed to me that the dark of that high space was alive and present. What it was, I knew not, but I felt a tremor of fear and excitement, what I now know as awe, as I walked into that space. Fast forward several years, we moved to Vancouver, and I attended the Unitarian Church of Vancouver with my family until I was 11 or 12. In high school, I was involved in sports. And after high school and a year of work and swimming, I left Vancouver, got a degree, moved to Montreal, and worked in a museum as an architectural historian. I left that career feeling not really satisfied with what I'd been doing, but unsure about what came next. Returning to the West Coast and feeling the need for more community in my life, I checked out the Unitarian Church of my childhood. There was a great young adult group there at the time, and they welcomed me and became my community. From time to time, I would sense that aliveness in worship that I had experienced as a child. It had to do with the people who were gathered together, some undefinable thing that happened, sometimes when we were all focused on what we were doing, or when someone said something that was both vulnerable and true, and suddenly the air felt like it was crackling with life. For me, it wasn't God, because it had to do with the people and how they were present to one another. But I can understand why some would call it God. This is the story of my call to ministry, but it isn't the whole story, because it wasn't just in worship that I felt that aliveness. There is another strand of the story that starts outside the Unitarian Church and has nothing to do with worship. It came alive in me when I was a young adult, and a friend I lived with became seriously ill. Only we didn't realize it at first because it happened so gradually. Her behavior made less and less sense. And then one day, when a bunch of us happened to be in the apartment together, when our friend was out, we spontaneously sat down in a circle and began sharing stories. There was a moment, a silence, when we all looked at each other and realized this is serious. Some decided that the healthiest thing for them was to withdraw. There was no judgment. We each made the choice that was right for us. I looked at myself and realized that I was concerned but not put off balance. I had good supports and I wanted to help. In short, I realized that I had something to offer. So I stayed with the smaller group that got together to figure out what we could do. And that was the beginning of my call to ministry, too. Sitting in a much smaller circle than any worship service, but a circle of community nonetheless. There is something that happens when people get together for worship or community building or social justice. There's something that happens when we each bring our focused intention and goodwill to that situation. Suddenly there are more possibilities than there were a moment before. So it seems appropriate this year, so soon after the 50th anniversary of the march from Selma to Montgomery, to be talking about beloved community. Although the phrase was coined by Josiah Royce, it was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. who made it popular and brought it into common use. Beloved community was their way of describing the society that they were seeking to bring about, a community where everyone is welcomed to participate and where each person has the opportunities to flourish, no matter their skin color, no matter their gender, their sexual orientation, no matter their beliefs. Dr. King told a story about a moment after the march to Montgomery when he and several thousand other people were all delayed at the airport. "As I stood with them," he said, "and saw white and Negro nuns and priests, ministers and rabbis, labor organizers, lawyers, doctors, housemaids, and shop workers brimming with vitality and enjoying a rare comradeship, I knew I was seeing a microcosm of the mankind of the future in this moment of luminous and genuine brotherhood." And today I'd like to think that he would say sisterhood, too. Beloved community is rooted in the concept of agape, the love for others that helps us get out beyond our own self-interest and work for the good of us all. It is the love that encourages us to see that our own happiness is bound up with the happiness of others. Beloved community isn't about being perfect. It doesn't mean that no one gets frustrated or mad or quarrels. That wouldn't be a human community. Beloved community means that we're committed to our ideals, to our vision of the world that we wish to bring about. So committed that we're willing to question our own behavior when someone else questions it, to let ourselves be changed by the vision we are striving for. If we make mistakes, and we will make mistakes, our commitment to beloved community nudges us to respond to them in ways that promote healing and wholeness. Loyalty to beloved community helps us avoid idolizing a particular program or way of doing things as an end in itself. Our goal is not a program or a policy, however hard we may be working for it. Our goal is beloved community, the transformation of each one of us that brings about the transformation of the whole. Dr. King said, "I do not think of political power as an end. Neither do I think of economic power as an end. They are ingredients in the objective that we seek." I think of Dr. King's vision of beloved community when I think of our Unitarian communities, whether we are here as parents hoping for community for our children, whether we are looking for a place of respite and renewal, or a platform for action and impact. We want to be welcomed as we are, whomever we love, whatever we believe. People come looking for belonging and community, and they stay because belonging to the community makes a difference in their lives. Many of us have a vision, a dream for society, and hope to see a little microcosm of it here in this community. Sometimes when newcomers get really excited about Unitarianism, they can't believe they've never heard of us before. They've been Unitarian all their lives. I feel the need to warn them. We will disappoint you. At some point, I will disappoint you for sure. We won't live up to our principles because we are not the beloved community. We are people journeying together on our way to beloved community. Lots of our Unitarian congregations have membership ceremonies to welcome new members. You can join the fellowship, you can sign the book, but I don't think you're really Unitarian until you've been disappointed by this community. Because when you are disappointed by the community as I was disappointed by the Unitarian Church of Vancouver and pretty much every other Unitarian congregation that I've been a part of, when that happens, you have a decision in front of you. You have to decide what you're going to do about it. Now, this choice looks different for each of us, depending upon our experiences and the stories we've told ourselves about our experiences. For me, personally, the choice is between isolation and connection, between bitterness and love. It's taken me a long time to learn that choosing bitterness is choosing my own isolation. Luckily for me and for all of us, life presents us with lots of opportunities to make these choices. And it is in these moments of choice, when I think about my purpose in being here and the purpose of this community, that I discover and rediscover again and again what it means to be Unitarian. Now, you have a choice of another sort in front of you today. Your board has told me that you want to grow. You have spent time identifying the goals and actions that you believe will help you grow. You've worked on these goals. You've made progress, and several of them good progress. And now you're wondering if you will make more progress if you decide to work with a minister. In order to answer that question, you need to know a little bit about me, which is why I've just spoken about some of my story. And you need to know a little bit about Unitarian ministers generally and how we work. One of the ways we keep beloved community alive and where it belongs, just outside of our reach, is through the practice of shared ministry. Ministry in this context means everything that we do that serves our purpose. It's caring for one another, it's the Sunday program, running workshops, being at tables, exploring ethics, raising children, all the things we do in our congregations. Shared ministry means that no one person owns this work. In leadership, the board and the minister work together, setting goals and coming to agreement about who will do what to achieve those goals. A minister, consulting or otherwise, is granted a particular leadership role, but the minister is not in charge. They're not the ultimate authority. Neither is the board, although the board is tasked with holding the authority of the congregation between meetings. But neither is the congregation, although the gathering of the members in a meeting is our highest decision-making authority in Unitarianism. The ultimate authority is really the mission or purpose of the congregation. This is what the board serves, and this is what the minister serves. And together we decide how to make this happen in this time and in this place. A minister is given use of the pulpit. They're invited to say what they believe, think, feel, need saying. But it's up to the congregation to decide what they actually want to do. The minister and the board work together to interpret the will of the congregation, formally through meetings like you'll have in a little bit, but also, and more often, as people vote with their feet and show up or not to various events. Together, we attempt to figure out our purpose, to figure out what beloved community is meant to look like right now, in this place, in this time. So what is your purpose? If you are serving it, and if you decide that you want me to help you serve it for a year, what is your purpose? The board has talked to me about growth. But growth isn't a purpose. Growth is a byproduct of serving your purpose and doing it well. According to your constitution, the purpose of this fellowship is to bring together religious liberals so that they may meet, study religious, moral, and philosophical questions, promote social concern, and further the knowledge and interests of Unitarian Universalism. That's a very good description for bylaws. But what I really want to know is, what is your purpose? What result are you expecting from doing all those things? Do you expect to have an impact in your community, in your city? Are you wanting to help grow the beloved community here in Regina? I can tell you that if all you want to do is have interesting presentations and discussions about social welfare or anything else, you will not grow. There are many places to do this now, many more than there were in the 1950s and 1960s. If you want to grow as a community, you need to be growing in ways not of your own choosing or mine. You need to be willing to listen to what the people who aren't here yet want. You need to be willing to figure out what Unitarianism will look like now. You need to decide to begin a journey to discover what beloved community means here in Regina in this decade. In the 50 years since the March to Montgomery, we have achieved so much and so little. There have been great changes, and inequality still exists, still causes pain and suffering. There have been great changes, and some of those changes are now threatened or being dismantled. In the United States, a new generation of activists has taken on the hashtag Black Lives Matter. They are bringing the voice of love and justice and stepping into the journey of beloved community in which all lives are respected. Here in Canada, in the past couple of years, we've seen an amazing rising up of First Nations and Métis women in Idle No More. A new generation of activists is taking their place at the table, highlighting the many ways in which Canada's First Peoples are not valued, not seen, not included in the mainstream picture of what Canada is. And they are asking for our solidarity and support. Dr. King spoke of justice as a unified concept. Where there is justice for some and not for others, there is no justice. You cannot divide up justice like so many cookie crumbs and sweep some in one direction, some in another. Injustice to one affects us all. It's easy, I think, to look back and see at particular times what working for beloved community meant. It's less easy to do that in the moment. Your stated goals for this coming year are about publicity, visibility, multi-generational community, and more. But don't kid yourself. The underlying purpose of those goals is beloved community, bringing about the transformation of ourselves, our communities, and our society. If you want to choose that journey, be prepared to put your hard hat on and pass out the life preservers, because you will be stirring powerful energies. Transformation is exciting, but never easy. It requires a maturity of trust and loyalty, the ability to work for something larger than ourselves, something that we have yet to fully comprehend. No one person has complete understanding of where we will go. No one person owns the definition of beloved community. Not me, not any of you. Ask yourselves if you are willing to risk change. Ask yourselves if you are willing to work together to identify the nudgings of conscience or spirit or whatever you choose to call it. Ask yourselves if you are willing to be changed as a community. For only when we ask these questions and take the next step on the journey are we fulfilling the real purpose that our congregations are meant to serve. Amen. Blessed be.